Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
That's it. I'm starting a petition to end all football matches after 88 minutes. Who's with me? Come on, lads. Who's with me? Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Charlton Live. My name is Louis Mendes. Thank you for joining me here on Maritime Radio on your Sunday evening. Joining me in the studio to talk about yesterday's hugely frustrating, once again, draw, this time at least, with Doncaster Rovers is Mark Nubio. Dear Mark.
Stratwitcher Louis, how are you?
I don't even know what that was.
That's Russian.
Oh, is that for your mother-in-law?
Yeah, yeah.
My Russian's not as good as it used to be, unfortunately. How are you? Enjoy yesterday's game? Following it, at least?
Well, no, because I've been following it on Twitter, because I was out yesterday, and, you know, we're 1-0 up, and it's good to hear, and, you know, BFG scoring, you're thinking, lovely, that's why he's back in the team, shore it up, get a goal. And then following, update, and 92 minutes, and it's, and then suddenly you see the goal emoji pop up, and you're thinking, not again, you know, so.
But then reality hits, and you realise it has happened again. Again, Charlton have let 3 points slip. At least it was only 2 points we let slip yesterday in the last couple of minutes. A 94th minute leveller for Doncaster Rovers, denying us what would have been 3 points on the road. So on tonight's show, we are, of course, going to look back at yesterday's game up at the Keep Moat Stadium. We're going to hear from a frustrated manager, Carl Robinson. We also want to hear from you guys a lot during this show, because we've got a lot of questions to ask. Why are we conceding so many late goals? Can we still make it into the playoffs? You know, we're still in a fairly comfortable position, aren't we? So, you know, have we got enough to turn it around, especially now that we're going to miss Steffi Mavadidi for a couple of months as well. We also want to know what you guys... looking ahead to Tuesday's game with Bradford. You know, how do you think we should line up for that one as well? So plenty of stuff to talk about. Of course, I mean, there is still the actual performance yesterday up at the Keep Moat Stadium, which for my money wasn't actually that bad at all. I thought we played really well. We should have been running out 2 or 3 nil winners yesterday until what happened. So let us know, of course, what you made of the performance as well. So you can get in touch with us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk is the email address. You can tweet us at Charlton Live as well. Before we hear the highlights then, Mark, I mean, you know, what were your feelings when that goal emoji, as you say, popped up in the 94th minute yesterday?
Frustration that it's happened so soon after the Oxford game, more than anything else. And, you know, the disappointment. You'd probably said, you know, do you take a 1-1 draw away? If we'd been losing 1-0 and we'd scored an equaliser in the 70th minute, yeah, you'll take a point. You're thinking, right, take a point and then try and pick up a point at home. But to get that close and to think to yourself, how could they as a group let that happen again? You know, because he'd made the right subs this time. You know, we said after the last game, you know, why didn't he bring on Jacko? Why didn't he bring on Defender? He did both this time, and yet we still conceded. So, I mean, I know it took an unlucky deflection, but, you know, it's still got to a point where you think to yourself, you know, who did we curse?
Yeah, seems like everyone I've ever passed in my Charlton supporting history. Right, so I mean, Mark's just said there he felt that Carl Robinson made the right subs yesterday. Do you agree with that? Because some people are questioning the subs. I mean, of course, people questioned the sub last week as well. So do you agree with that? I mean, and Mark quite rightly pointed out we did the opposite this week to what we did last week in terms of we tried to shore it up at the back. Last week we brought in attacking players. Both times it's had sort of the same outcome, really. So let us know if you agreed with Mark there. Do you think he made the right subs or do you think he made the wrong ones? Let us know. studio@charltonlive.co.uk or tweet us at Charlton Live. Right, let's have a listen to the highlights from yesterday, if you can stand it. This is how it went up at the Keep Moat Stadium.
Pressing now, and McGuinness wins it back for Charlton. Oh, right. Lovely touch from Forster Caskey to find Fosu. Fosu inside his man to try to take him out, row into the edge of the penalty area. Crossfield ball. Can it find Marshall? Find Fosu? No, he can't. And it's out to Cashier on the edge of the area with a shot and wide right. So wins it back off the throw. That's great work from Tariq Fosu. He's going on a run. Fosu's past the last man into the box. Ball into it. Looking for McGuinness on.
What a clearance.
Just beaten to it by Rose. Not Barrow, but sorry, Boyle, who scoops it over the bar. And Charlton have a corner.
It's great work from Tariq Fosu. He's so good at running at players when he gets getting that situation. On that occasion, he was on the left-hand side, similar to the goal we scored against Fleetwood. We beat, I think it was Pond on the day, going to the penalty area. But on this occasion, he looked to cross it for McGuinness, who made a good run inside. It was good covering defending from Boyle, and it just deflected off, and luckily for Doncaster, went over the bar. Corner Charlton.
Great work from Tariq Fosu. And now it's Forster Caskey over here on this near side to take the corner. Swings it in. It's gone deep. Bowers at the far post. Gets ahead of there. Oh, it's in! Patrick Bauer heads the ball down.
Come on!
Beyond Ian Lawler and into the back of the net for Charlton's opener.
Oh, I can't believe that went in, Terry Smith. The ball came in from Forster Caskey at the back post. Bauer's able to beat his man. He just heads it down on the ground almost. I think catches the keeper out by surprise. I was expecting him to claw it away. And it ended up in the back of the net. And Charlton have the lead after 17 and a half minutes. Ball forward to Beeston on the edge of the penalty area. A little reverse ball finds Rowe in the penalty area. The shot comes in from Marquise and straight at Amos. And quite luckily so as well. Corner shall be taken by Coppinger. He swings it in to a decent area. McGuinness is a good header away. Reeves flicks it to his left and Fosu will pick it up. And Fosu beats his man as well. And Tariq Fosu approaching Doncaster half. It's 2v2 momentarily. Fosu trying to take on Blair. He's forced him inside. Fosu ball across to Reeves and a penalty area. Lays it back for McGuinness. McGuinness gets under control. Shoots. Marshall blocked. Marshall again. It's cleared away in the end, and Charlton should have made it too.
Why did Ben Reeves pass
this? The referee takes a look at his watch, and there is the half-time whistle. Long diagonal ball forward from Conza. Finds De Silva. Lovely first touch. De Silva in the pounds here. Reverse ball. Tariq Fosu shapes on his left foot. Fosu will go for goal. Parried behind by Lawler.
What a ball that was. And secondly, what a takedown by De Silva to get beyond his man. Superb football from Charlton. And then he picked out Fosu, who was on his wrong foot, back to his left. Stinging shot, which I suppose Lawler in the end did well to parry away.
Charlton have the free kick, which they play short. Forster Caskey, chip ball towards the far post towards McGuinness. McGuinness heads down to Reeves in the penalty. Reeves shoots, good save by Lawler. Great effort from Reeves, and it's cleared away in the end.
To have it on this right hand side with Blair out to Kouamia. Goes back to Blair under pressure from Fosu, who might step in. He does. Tariq Fosu in towards the edge of the penalty area. Tariq Fosu, can he finish? Goes past the keeper.
Oh, what a challenge.
Last ditch tackle. Is that Anderson?
He came storming back. Last
ditch challenge from Anderson to clear it away for a corner when Fosu had done everything right to beat his man, beat the keeper. But in the process of beating the keeper and going wide, it just allowed Anderson to slide in. 5 minutes of added time here. Blair, further right to Coppinger. McGuinness trying to stop him. Not according to the linesman. McGuinness still up against Coppinger, and he's cut it back inside. Left foot into the box. Marquis there. Gets a little header. Down into the penalty spot. Back to Marquis. It's going to fall to McCulloch with a shot. Deflection. Oh, and it's headed in. And Doncaster had the equaliser. I think it was Blair who got the final header as he went into the box. And Charlton have been pegged back in the final couple of minutes.
Oh, I do not believe it. It's one of the scrappiest goals you'll ever see. Coppinger gets a bit of space, chips it in. Marquise heads it down. I think Houghton in the box. It rolls to McCulloch. His shot deflects, loops up in the air. Blair continues his run from right back. No one tracks him. But the second game running, it's a right back scoring. And he heads past Amos. And I just can't stress how Charlton not got 3 points out of this.
In the 94th minute as well.
How on earth?
It comes away. Referee looks at his watch and blows the whistle. And Charlton, from a commanding position really in the game, have come away with just the point. In two games running, we scratch our heads and wonder just how we didn't get 3 points out of the game.
Yeah, again, the same as last week. It doesn't sound any better on second listening, does it, Mark? I mean, it's such huge frustration. And it's happened 2 weeks in a row. I mean, is that something to worry about? The fact is it happens with almost alarming frequency now. I mean, I tweeted out a stat earlier on, and we'll talk about it. We conceded 27% of the goals we've conceded have come in the last 10 minutes of games, and that's by far the biggest percentage for a 10-minute split. So, I mean, why? And why does it keep happening?
It's a coincidence. I think if it happens again on Tuesday night at Venier, I might say there's a pattern emerging. As to why, I don't know, with the mentality of a footballer where they want to do the right thing, they want to play, but sometimes you've just got to get rid, you've got to stick it in row Z, you've got to knock it out as far as you can further up the field. I mean, I think that what happens is that we just drop too deep. If we're winning, we drop too deep, we invite the pressure on. And of course, if you've got that many numbers in the box, it's going to take a deflection or a bad tackle. I mean, we've benefited and we've equalised ourselves, you know, in the last minute. You know, we were two down and came back and, you know, and equalised. And it's an amazing feeling. I personally am one of those people, it's annoying. I feel more frustrated if we've conceded very early in a game, the first 5 minutes, and then we then lose 1-0 and we haven't had a chance in 85 minutes. It seems like our attacking players are getting chances. It's just not going for us. You know, Fosser had a great, fantastic chance. You know, I think 2-0... It's going to sound funny. I think I'd have been more confident at 2-0. They say 2 is a bit of a worry. But I think at 2-0, I think we'd have just seen it out. I think we've won 1-0 for us at the moment. It's just hard to point.
I mean it does come down to the fact that if we've got that second goal, like we did away at Rotherham earlier on in the season, I'm certain we would have finished it off. And yes, we had so many chances. And we'll hear from Carl Robinson later on in the show. He says we're not ruthless enough now. But if going back to that goal that we've conceded at the last minute now, everyone's watched the replay. And we see the ball's come out to Luke McCulloch. He's hit the shot. It's ballooned up into the air and now it's fallen into the space of the left-hand side of our penalty areas as we're looking at it, as Charlton back four are looking at it, and found a completely unmarked Matt Blair, who was their right back. Okay, so immediately we're all watching the replay now, and I'd love to hear your views on this as well, listeners. So what's happened is, so people are going to look at, obviously Harry Lennon was the left back of that situation. Now people don't realise that Josh McGuinness now was playing left wing. He came onto the left wing as we tried to shore it up later on. So there's two schools of thought here. So the ball's gone into the middle. Lennon's gone across into the middle to try and block a shot when the ball was on the edge of the six-yard box. In a way, they've done their job because the ball's got out as far as the edge of the box. Now, the shot's come in from McCulloch. It's gone up into the air, and it's the right back who therefore, so people might be unfairly targeting Harry Lennon here, because if it's the right back, then it's the left midfielder who has to track the run as well. So people might point at Josh McGuinness for that one as well. At the same time, though, when you're putting bodies on the line, it's chaos in the last minute. I mean, these sort of markings and runs sometimes go out the window as well, I guess.
All the activities in the D, and that's where you want Lennon. He's the tallest guy on our team. So, you know, it has taken the deflection. You know, you want all your players to be round the ball just to try and block any potential shot. And it has taken a wicked deflection. Their right backs gambled on it coming out that way, headed, you know, could Amos spread himself a touch more and done the kind of like Schmeichel throw his body. He seemed to sort of like throw a half-hearted hand at it. I'm not blaming Amos, because it's just one of those things. It could have gone the other side of the post. It's gone in. I mean, we've taken a point away. Okay, you can say it's Doncaster, but you know,
it felt like a massive defeat yesterday. Yeah. To be honest, it still does, especially considering it happened last week as well. Right, I mean, the big team news before the game, of course, was Patrick Bauer, who was coming in to replace Lennon in the centre of defence. He partnered Ezri Konsa, along with Ben Reeves replacing Mavadidi. I mean, first with Bauer, were you expecting that change before the game?
I was, and more than happy to see him back and alongside Ez. You know, we've been saying that, you know, there needed to be a slightly more mature ahead. I know Bauer's not that old, but, you know, alongside, you know, the kids at the back. So, you know, I was glad to see Bauer. Reeves was more of a puzzle for me. I thought he'd have started with Kai Kai in the Mavadidi role and give him a bit of a free rein like he gave Steffi. I think Reeves doesn't, you know, do as much for me as a player like Kai Kai would.
Interesting as well with Reeves. I mean, he did have a couple of efforts yesterday, but when we start going through the timeline of the game, there was one where he really should have scored, but instead he passed it back to Josh McGuinness, who had a shot blocked right on the stroke of half time. So the game gets underway, and Charlton looked to start on the front foot. Fossu's winning a free kick, which he floated over the bar. I mean, Tariq Fossu yesterday for me was absolutely imperious. I thought he was excellent yesterday, and it shows. I mean, when he was coming back from injury a few weeks ago, I was really expecting him to take a little while to get back up to speed, but that hasn't seemed to have been the case at all with him. He's started like a runaway train, really. Since
he's
come back.
He's a hungry young player, and I think he was unlucky to get the injury when he did. He was on fire at the time, and like I say, sometimes it does take a few games just to get back into the swing of things. I mean, I don't think he'd played any of the under-23s warm-up games, so to get straight back into the team. But he's got that X factor. He's got that ability just to sparkle, which, you know, we need. You know, you can't have, you know, 11 just dull players.
Mm-hmm. But interesting now, like we say, he was involved in a lot of our stuff going forward. So quick on the counter attack. But obviously, we know in the second half he's had a couple of chances which he hasn't taken. Now I think Carl, we'll hear from Carl Robinson during the interview later on. But when Fossu came off in the last 10 minutes or so, I mean, I didn't see it myself, but a few people pointed it out to me that he threw the water bottle down. He was frustrated that he didn't come off. Now, I mean, Carl said he doesn't really mind about that, and then jokes that he should have thrown the ball in the goal. But I mean, there's two schools of thought here. Is that, oh, you love to see a bit of passion? Of course he's angry. He's got to come off. Or is it, you know, he's got to calm down a bit?
No, I think he's frustrated with himself. He knows he could do better. I mean, he set himself a high standard. And you've got to think yourself, in the last 5 minutes, if he'd got another chance, he'd have probably made sure that he finished it. And so he's thinking, if the manager's pulled me off, I don't get a chance to redeem myself in this game. You know, I can understand taking out on the water bottle. So,
yeah, and it does show passion. Now, our first real chance came after 8 minutes when Marshall on the right hand side played a low ball across the face of goal, went all the way to Fossu on the far side. And his ball in was looking for Reeves, who was getting forward in that number 10 position, which was good to see. But the defender just got a foot in there. Came out to Ahmed Kashi, who very nearly scored his second goal in two games. So interesting to see that Kashi's now finding a bit more confidence to go forward.
It is. I mean, maybe because he is just a touch more confident going forward, having Jake behind him, than he is in having Joe. You know, I'm a great Joe Aribo fan, and I thought he was a bit unlucky to be dropped straight away. But, you know, if it's going to give Kashi more license to go forward, you know, swap it up a bit, because, you know, the opposition are probably expecting Jake to make those runs and they're not watching Ahmed.
Yeah.
So if he can get in a position where he can whack it in from sort of like 35 yards, you know, do it.
Yeah, and now this is on 17 minutes. This is an example of why it is so good to have a player like Tariq Fosu, who's there to make things work. He burst into the area down the left-hand side, put a dangerous low cross in that I think it was McGuinness in the middle, who was just ready to touch it home, but the defender got a last-ditch touch in to put it over the crossbar. And that's where we scored from. Now, big Paddy B, that's his third goal of the season. He's obviously on his return from injury. He'd only actually played once in the last... It was 1 month he'd been out injured, but that game he played a month ago, I can't remember who it was against off the top of my head, that was his only appearance in 2 months, because he'd come back, played in that game, and was injured again. So great for him to start with a goal as well. And you know, always good to see a defender getting forward and making their presence felt in the opposition box.
Yeah, I think he's just a touch more comfortable bringing the ball out of defence himself. Whereas I think, you know, Lennon, likes to hit a long pass. I think with Paddy, he can dribble it out and dribble it through the midfield. You know, so I think he's got a touch, I don't know, maybe paying him too much of a compliment, a touch of a Ferdinand about him. In fact, he can get to the halfway line and not get a nosebleed.
Yeah, he can murk people so whenever he wants. So there, Charlton take the 1-0 lead, and you're setting up thinking, right, here we go, because we had been fairly dominant that time, and then we had a flurry of free kicks and corners into the penalty area. Couldn't make anything count. It was 25 minutes before Doncaster got their first real effort on goal, as Marquise, the former Millwall striker, with a low shot that was straight at Ben Amos. But I mean, it just showed that, I mean, in that first half, it really was us soaking up a bit of pressure and then looking on the counter every time. And that is how you expect us to be playing away from home.
I mean, it is. I mean, and it's good to see. It's that they're not going to, you know, we've seen some teams come here and they've scored and there's still been a half to go, and then they've suddenly put 10 men behind the ball. And so I think Carl's ethos is, you know, we've got to keep attacking. But, you know, if we're going to be that dominant in that, that's when we need to score. It's not, you know, straight away. Put two. If we're 2-3 up at half time, that's it. It's a damage limitation for the other side. But at 1-0, it's easy for the opposition manager at half time to say, right, it's only one goal, so we'll keep chipping away. We'll do the things which we do. We'll correct our mistakes. So it's. I think it's easier sometimes for the home manager, if you're 1-0 down, to change it round.
Yeah, and then right on the stroke of half time, now this sort of summed Josh McGuinness up for me. It was a corner for Doncaster. A corner came in, he was the one who headed it clear. It started off a lightning counter attack with Fosu. I mean, we all know how quick Fosu is, bursting over halfway, sent the ball forward for Reeves. Now, this is where Reeves should have had a shot. He was maybe 8 yards from goal, direct in line with the goal. He should have shot. Lack of confidence, it would seem, come through. But the person he pulled it back to on the edge of the box was Josh McGuinness, who'd won that header, made his way up the pitch, and it shows how hardworking he is. But again, it shows how we're at times not ruthless, and ruthless is probably going to be the word of the show. You know, Ben Reeves didn't have that ruthless streak to fire across the goalkeeper and put it into the back of the net. When it came back to Josh, there was two or three Donny players within in between him and the goal. His shot was blocked. It came out to Marshall, who saw a shot blocked as well, and eventually they hacked it clear. So perhaps that little spell of play there pretty much summed up what our performance was all about yesterday. Excellent counter-attack, not ruthless enough, and then didn't quite have the luck as well with the bouncing around, because they got it in the second half.
It's worrying with Reeves, because, you know, he scores quite a few goals, or has done for his previous team. You know, to get in that position and then go, oh, I can't have a go myself. Thinking, look, you have a go yourself, you're going to score, the keeper's going to save it, or you're going to spoon it over the bar. But you've made a decision. He's got to the edge and then gone, oh no, let me give it to one of the strikers.
Why do you think his confidence might be low? Because, I mean, like I say, he is a good player. He scored plenty of goals last season. Why is he not taking that shot?
I don't know. I mean, probably because it was like the start of the season. You know, he wasn't in because he was injured. He wasn't fit, wasn't he, at the start of the season? He hadn't had a proper pre-season. And then he's been in and out and in and out. I mean, he could be one of those players. He needs 4 or 5 games, solid, you know, consistent games, to get that kind of stamina going and get his ability back and get his iron on goal. Thing is, I'd be interested to see, you know, if our stats guys could work out how many times that McGuinness has headed the ball in his own area. Because I know a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, we should have let McGuinness go on loan and kept Carlin. But Carlin wouldn't have put his head on anything in the area as a defender, where Josh, you know, he's got the height, he's got the leap, he's got a good defensive header. You know, so I'm a Josh fan, so it's
Yeah, certainly. I certainly, you can't underestimate the amount of work he does for us in our defensive sphere. Now, after half time, again we started well. I mean, Doncaster, they weren't really much cop at all yesterday, and that's why it's so frustrating to come away with just a point. And at the start of the second half, there's a beautiful move from Jay De Silva, where someone had played a raking ball across to the left hand side, and the defender was coming towards him, and Jay controlled it and took it past him with one beautiful touch, really deft, but took it past the man, put the ball into Fosu, and again in the penalty area, couple of step overs, great close control. It comes to the finish, and it wasn't even a bad shot, to be fair, but Ian Lawler in the Donny goal made a good save. So Jay De Silva as well, I mean, as a left back getting forward, We see that plenty of times from him, and he looked really good yesterday.
Well, I think it's noticeable if you look at De Silva now to how he was. I mean, we knew he was a good player, and I was pleased to see him come back to us. But I think possibly the coaching he's received this season has improved him as a player as well, because I think his crossing is a lot better now. I mean, he's quick. He can knock it past. He's got good close control. I mean, he's actually got a very good shot on him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him score, you know, a 35-yard sculpture before the end of the season. So I think, you know, it's credit to the coaching he's received here this season and having a solid, you know, he's not in and out of the team, because we don't really have much cover on the left side. I mean, Page is only just coming back. So if he was injured, we're a bit stuck on that side. But I think he's been easily, for me, one of my top three players of the season.
Yeah. Right, and then another big chance. This is how shows go these days. We're listing massive chances that we miss, and then at the end we'll list something disappointing when they score. But there was a good chance where a free kick was floated into the box. McGuinness nods it down, and this time Reeves did go for goal. It's sort of like an instinctive strike on the volley towards the near post. Again, Lawler's pulled off a good save. And I mean, you get to times where you sometimes thinking, oh, this keeper's not going to be beaten today, and then you think, or do you think, is the finishing not quite up to stand? I mean, in this particular case, I thought Reeves did everything he could do. Really there and volleyed it at goal, but sometimes you get a goalkeeper who's not going to be beaten more than once.
I mean, we've come up against that a couple of times this season where, you know, the team has been bad but their goalkeeper's been outstanding, and that's just the way it goes. But we, you know, we've also won games where Amos has, you know, kept us in it and got us for points. So, you know, Lawless, you know, he's picking up a wage from Doncaster, he's doing his job, and, you know, if he's a half decent goalkeeper, you know, he's no Turam, he can catch a ball. So, you know, I think you've got to sometimes, you know, as frustrating as it is for us, you've also got to give credit where credit's due in with a goalkeeper with a save. Because, you know, I've seen goalkeepers make amazing saves right in front of me in the lower north from the opposition team, and you've just got to stand up and go, you know what, that's a really good save.
And our biggest chance really to put daylight between ourselves and Doncaster came on 77 minutes. Now, Fosse was spotted a Doncaster defender sort of dilly-dallying in the middle of just inside the Donny half, pounced on it, and he's all of a sudden bearing down on goal one-on-one. You know, the keeper's standing up tall, so he's made the decision to go round him, so he could have shot, he decided to go round him, and the goal's gaping, and it's just Tom Anderson's come out of absolutely nowhere and wiped him out. I mean, when you see something like that, I mean, you're wishing all of a sudden, oh, why didn't you take it first time? But if he takes it around the keeper and he's got a simple finish, is it one of those ones where you don't know what to say?
Again, you look at it in a mirror image. You know, that happens to us. He goes around Amos and Jay De Silva appears from nowhere and toes it away. You're going, wow, that's a fantastic tackle. And sometimes you say, you know, give credit to the tackle. It's hard. You can't blame Fosu. You know, he's made a decision. He's gone around the keeper, and he wasn't expecting the guy to rampage past him and take the ball off him. It's, you know, he thought he had a, you know, maybe a second or 2 seconds more than he did.
Yeah.
So
I just think, I mean, he took it round the keeper really, really nicely as well. And as he got round, I think that, I don't know if you look at his feet, there was just the tiniest of stumbles just as he was standing up to poke it in. But I mean, that would have been it. That would have killed him off, because Donny were really not that good yesterday, and that would have been the thing that finished it off. Now, so we get into the last 10 minutes, and now we start making the subs. The first sub actually came I think it was 8 minutes, 8 minutes left to go when Fosu makes way for Sully Kaikai. I mean, surprised by that? I mean, in a way, he was, you know, protecting Fosu, he's still coming back from injury, don't forget, and bringing on a Kaikai. And I think one of the problems we perhaps had last week was where we brought on both Kaikai and Gyro at the same time. And perhaps they weren't quite in the system and weren't tracking back again. So to bring on one of them, and, you know, as someone with fresh legs who should be able to track back, I mean, do you agree with that decision at the time?
you know what, it's with, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you'd say, well, who, you know, maybe would have been better, do you put Zaro on, who's got a touch more height than Kaikai? You know, do you put Aribo on and just really dense out the midfield? Or, you know, he's put on Kaikai because he's thinking, no, they're going to pile forward. If we get a chance on the break, he's whip it quick. You know, he's a good young player. Maybe he can get us something, especially, let's say, he's going to drop Josh back into midfield. It's hard with that, you know, 10 minutes to go. You know, it's a gamble, and it's a gamble yesterday which failed.
Yeah, so. I mean, because it could go either way, and that's the annoying thing. I mean, I think you said it earlier on in the show. If we brought in another attacking players, because the next one to come on was Jacko, who came on with about 5 minutes left, and the amount of times when we conceded late and people have called for, why didn't Jacko come on and shore it up? You know, he did come on, and then all of a sudden there is a goal down the other end anyway, and. So it's one of those ones where you never really know which way it's going to go. Now, the final substitution was 3 minutes into injury time. Jay De Silva was taken off for Harry Lennon. Now, if you think back to the home game against Doncaster, where we won the game 1-0, which is what we should have done yesterday, you'll probably remember that Navi Sarr was brought on for Jay De Silva in the second half because they were sending long diagonals towards Jay De Silva because, you know, he's not the tallest player in world football. So brought on Navi Sarr, who obviously is very tall, and Harry Lennon himself is tall. So again, you kind of think that would make sense because it worked beforehand. If we need a tall player to deal with an aerial bombardment that's coming in, that would be the right decision. That'd be the perfect decision, surely.
True, I was about to say Jay De Silva's probably not the tallest person on a Sabutio team. But I say you've got to think, the referee in the 93rd minute, he's going to add on the time for the substitution. You know, keep him on, and maybe he doesn't add that time and they don't score in that last 30 seconds. So, and De Silva's got a good leap on him. I mean, other teams have tried that this season, tried piling it up, and he's either very close to the player leaping or he gets his head on it, you know, or they can't get that big head across because he still puts himself around De Silva. He's got a spring on him. So, that's the tough one out of the three subs, you know, to understand. I can understand Jacko, I can understand Kaikai. Putting Lennon on in the 93rd minute, where you know the referee's going to have the time it's taken, you know, because, you know, De Silva's taken a dawdle off, thinking, oh, I'm going to wind down the clock. The referee's just going to go, you know what, I'm going to add on another minute. So, and in that minute, we concede. So, you know, have we shot ourselves in the foot with that last sub? That, out of the three of the decisions, I would say, is the one which I wouldn't have made.
And then karma strikes, of course, when that freakish deflection from McCulloch's shot lands in that area where there is no one. I mean, you said you thought... I mean, I thought Amos did come out and make himself reasonably big for that, but it's just the way that Blair headed it. He almost headed it more softly than you'd expect. It's like almost like when someone's bowling at the end of the innings and bowls a medium pace one down to try and catch the batsman out when they've been bowling fast pace all innings. It's one of those where Amos almost went too soon.
Yeah,
and it snucks in. And oh, I hate Doncaster after that now.
Did you go home and break your mug?
No, it's a brand new mug. Got a very nice mug from Doncaster, actually. Yeah, but no, hugely frustrating. And at full time, I mean, then you could see just how deflated the players were coming off there. I mean, I saw Bauer coming off and looking at the big screen actually to watch the replay of the goal. We were all watching that replay in the dugout as well and trying to work out if it was Lennon who lost his man or if it was McGuinness or if it is just one of those last-ditch freaky things that can happen. A shot goes up in the air, everyone's bundling on top of the shot to try and stop it going through. It falls into the one bit where we've vacated space, and so very frustrating at full time. Now, I mean, we got a bit of a let-off there that the Bradford went and conceded a last-minute equaliser at home to Bury at least. So these last two games, I mean, we've been given a bit of a let-off, but at the same time, if we'd held on, we could be quite comfortably in the playoff places now.
Well, it happened a lot. I don't know if you watch any of the other highlights of our league. There were quite a few goals after the 90th minute. And, you know, it does happen. It happens all round.
Wouldn't happen if my petition gets its way.
I mean, no, yeah, we're not in a bad position at all. You've got to think we're seventh. So there's 19... How many teams in the division?
24.
Okay, so there's 17 teams who would rather be where we are. So, and we've got games in hand.
Two games in hand.
So, you know, mid playoff. You know, I think we'll finish top six. As to where in the top six, don't know. You know, I know who I don't want to face in the playoffs, but you know, I think we've got enough about us, and we've got enough leading up to the end of the season with enough winnable games. You know, you look at them on paper, but there's enough there for us to say, you know, we're still going to be there and thereabouts. I don't think we're going to drop off now. You know, I think I can see teams above us dropping off and having some bad runs, because a few of them haven't had any bad runs at all. So, you know, I'm a glass half full at the moment. I'm still looking at the league table thinking, that's not a bad place to be. Because sometimes a team who sneaks in, you know, in six does well because you've got the momentum.
Hopefully that'll be us. Right, time to hear from Carl Robertson. Just before that, don't forget, if you guys want to have your say on yesterday's game, you can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Plenty of you have got in contact already, and we will read those after we hear from Carl Robertson. Now, he says the word ruthless about 50 times. So I want to know, why are we not ruthless? Text in, why are we not ruthless? What's stopping us from being ruthless at Charlton Live? Let us know. Right, this is what Carl had to say to myself and to, I think, to Jake and to Terry and to Clive after yesterday's game up at Doncaster.
I don't think the players did anything wrong. It took two deflections and my players are throwing their bodies at the line. It's just, it's someone on the heel and loops of someone. And Hayes came on to obviously pat and then a bit of an engineer hit him more and more dives onto Jay, so we came on to shore everything we did say was to shore up. They did not create a chance, so we've done our job. But the thing is that you have an unlucky deflection and it drops to someone who scores. That's not our shape today, but the most important thing is, the big thing for me is, you don't take your chances at 1-0. I said this to you last week, we need to be more ruthless when we go 1-0 up. We were excellent today. I don't think anyone can write a negative thing about our performance. The big thing is that we've just not turned a very comfortable position into 3 points. And that's what it was.
This is something we've talked about quite a lot this season, where chances are being created and just can't quite
take it. Well, I can't score them. We have to be more ruthless. We have to have more of an edge. I think sometimes when we go into these situations, people think we'll get another one. And it's not. We need to find that ruthless edge. That's the big thing for me, just as the players in there. Be more ruthless. Listen, 1 or 2 points outside the players with two games in hand. I'm sure if you offered that to most teams, they would take that right now. But still, if we don't learn right now these situations, we'll just drift the season away. I remember, I think we were on 46 points with only 4 or 5 games to go last year. Shot at 47 with a number of games still to go. We're miles ahead of where we were last year. But we're still, but because the perfections of what we weren't trying to achieve, we're still a million. We've got to be more ruthless. And if I was coming to you and saying, we scored from a set piece, we didn't really create many chances, but we held on nearly, I'd be more disappointed. No, we're creating chances. We created chances against Oxford, we created chances against Doncaster, and didn't take them. And they're the bits that frustrate me.
It's two weeks in a row now this has happened. Is that going to affect the players' morale or anything
no,
like that?
No, because it's gone now. If you look at it though, the big thing for me, I've just spoke to the players in there. I think Warsaw was in 90 plus, MK was 90 plus. I think something in the region of 15, I think if we would have held on from 90 minutes on, it's an extra 15, it would have been 15 points guaranteed. I think we've only nicked something in the region of maybe, I think it's 4 or 5 now. So we've thrown away 10 points in the last 2 minutes, and that's not tactical. Because tactically we made subs. We do that today. I told you we made subs and we learnt from that mistake. And today we've not given them an opportunity. Everything worked the way we wanted to, but when you have two deflections, a drop to someone unmarked at the back post, the right back of all people. If we had a big criticism, I'd say we let Coppinger out too easy in this corner. But we were cruising. At no stage today did I feel frustrated or like we were ever going to throw the game away.
Yeah, performance-wise, it was a good performance day. In particular, Tariq Fosu once again stood out for me.
Tariq was exceptional, but he's got to score. And you can see he's still getting back to fitness. We've got to protect him for the next game and the next game. If he runs his little legs into the ground, he'll find it very, very difficult. And we just felt the more and more... We always felt they were going to score down our left. It was because Tariq's so offensive in his shape that's an area that people look to pick us off. We spoke of that against Oxford. The one thing Josh McGuinness does give us, gives us a bit more stability in that. So everything we learned from Oxford we put right, but still Lady Luck just wasn't on the player's side today. Thought the referee with some of his decisions he made, I think he got bullied into one or two things as well. I think he was quite weak in some of his decisions, and we're not getting the rub of the green. I tell me how leading up to the goal, right, when the assistant referee gives it to us, he's looking at it, the referee is further away and he gives it the other way. How is that? How the assistant referee was so clear on his decision. Reeves, he was in and he was onside. So the tackles that were on Tariq in the first half, you've got people at the top level moaning about what their players get. Listen, come down to this level and see the challenges that our players get at this level. So today, I think his performance was so inconsistent.
Chance to try and get 3 points in a huge game at the Valley on Tuesday now against Bradford.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Obviously, they'll probably have a new manager by then as well. And that'll give them a bit more impetus. I think there's rumours that that's almost done. So we're going to be playing all these teams when they're getting new managers. Which we've got some big games coming up. Bradford, then MK away a week today. It's a big week and it's important. Listen, we got off with a point. We wanted three. It's not to be. We've not lost contact with anybody else in the round. Maybe just Rotherham, maybe. But what that's certainly done with that result has certainly brought Scunthorpe back into the pack as well. So listen, we've got to play everybody as well. That's a lot of games and big games coming up.
Thanks, Carl.
The players shouldn't be disheartened at all today, should
no,
they?
No, listen, the players' mentality is still the same. I don't think they can be too disappointed with the performances. I don't think any of them can turn around and say they didn't play well today. No. I think every player played really well, but it's still, you've still not won the game, and they've got the win offers by a deflection.
And the big moment just before half time, make it 2-0 there. And that's...
Yeah, you got that chance. But whether you want to blame Reevesy for not finishing or Josh for not finishing, when you want to blame Tariq for that one, whether you want Reevesy for the other one, where he's hit inside. Tariq, when he's gone 1-on-1, he's hit it high and it keeps me the wonder saves high to his right. You can go through a number of opportunities. I could be wrong here. Did they only have two shots on target today?
Well, we only counted one Marcus. Save from Amos.
Marcus in the first half. So we've come in and done our job.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that's frustrating me. And listen, the fans were excellent. Obviously disappointed at the end, just as we were. That's an amazing support to come up here, and we feel like we let them down a little bit.
But you come away with a point rather than last week when it was
yeah,
even more depressing.
Every cloud in some ways. But listen, there's a long way to go, a lot more fight left in us.
And Carl, I'm just with Tariq, taking off in the 82nd minute. I know you said because you wanted more stability on the left, but he seemed quite upset when he came off. I think he chucked his water bottle or gloves or something.
That doesn't bother me. Yeah. Should have chucked the ball in the net. It would be nice.
Yeah. And with him, are you still maybe cautious?
Yeah, we are 100%. Yeah, I think you've seen we played Steffi in 1990 and put people near an injury thing to lose. We lost to Tariq and we lost to Steffi. I think we'll find ourselves a little bit low in that area. So we've got, there's also a protection element to that as well sometimes. But I'd say every substitution we made today seemed to work. We made substitutions the other day and he didn't work. It was very obvious and why we conceded. And they created the opportunity to our poor discipline or indiscipline. Today that wasn't the case.
And with Paddy, did you say he was injured?
Who?
Patrick Bauer.
Yeah, no, he had cramp later on in the game. That's why we put Len on to sort of put Len on alongside Jay De Silva. The way they were playing, it would have been a little bit. So we just said to Jay to Len stay a bit narrower and go on when you need it, which he did.
Big performance from Bauer, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was excellent for Jay De Silva. I think you'd find it hard to find a bad player today. Mm. I think you really would.
And will Pissy be back for Tuesday?
He's trained today. He trained with us Thursday, Friday. He trained against today. He'll recover tomorrow. He'll train with us on Monday. And it could be a possibility he could be on the bench on Tuesday.
And also Nicky and Jose including the matchday squad, I think, for the first time since last January. Yeah. Could you see that happening this time, maybe a month ago?
No. But he's been very open and very honest in one or two things, and I can't ask no more. This is what we came here for. We came here for love. I won't give it up. This is what we came here for. We came here for love. I know it's enough. This is what we came here for.
Conte does superbly well to win it off of Maloney. And now set up a Hearn Grant on the left-hand side of the penalty area. The Hearn Grant. Little step over, ball back across, oh, behind everybody. It's going to be picked up by Forster Caskey on the other side of the penalty area. Forster Caskey, left foot shot. Oh, what a goal!
Oh, what a finish!
Oh, what a belter from Jake Forster Caskey to absolutely round off a glorious afternoon for the Addicts.
So good to hear from Carl Robinson there after yesterday's 1-1 draw up at Doncaster. Now he mentioned it himself, and I'll be doing them a disservice if I also didn't mention it here on tonight's show, but the support yesterday up at the Keepmo Stadium was absolutely superb. There was, I think, 783, I think it was, Charlton fans who made the way up, so just under 800, but they did not stop singing from the first minute to the last. And Absolutely brilliant support, and I don't think they deserve the 3 points, and unfortunately they didn't get it, but that's part of being a Cheltenham fan, I guess. But yeah, superb support, and well done to everyone who travelled up there. Carl's reaction, I mean, do you agree with what he said in the whole? I mean, he's obviously frustrated that we didn't take our chances, because we're talking about the players who played well, like Fosu, and he said, yeah, he played well, but he didn't take his chance, and that must be so frustrating for a manager who knows that someone like Tariq Fosu can score more goals than he has in the last couple of weeks.
True, I mean, pretty much he realised he couldn't point the finger at anybody as he could after the Oxford game. At the Oxford, he could say, you know, it was too much me. And after this game, you know, if they were honest, you know, in their performance, and, you know, I think he recognises it's just one of those, you know, kick you in the teeth moments which happen in football. So
happen all the time to us. my 25 years of watching Charlton has been non-stop teeth kicking, unfortunately. Right, let's have a look at the correspondence from yesterday. First one comes in from Mark Cutler, actually. He says, could you say happy ninth birthday to my son, Freddie Cutler, who was actually last week, but I forgot to send the message. He's a massive Charlton fan, and he sent us a picture of his cake that was made by his very, very talented mum. So happy birthday to young Freddie there. Right, Phil tweets us, says, hi guys, how many more times are we going to throw games away late on? Yes, we can blame the players for their game management, but ultimately the manager has to take the blame. His substitutions have cost us so many points over the season. The squad are underachieving right now, and new owners have a big decision to make. For me, it's 50-50, a couple more late failures, and I think it could be goodbye to Robbo. And obviously, with the takeover in whatever stage it is, I mean, it looked like, as we were coming towards the end of last week, that a deal in terms of a price has been agreed. I think it's what Rick Everett was getting at. I mean, it said done deal, so a price has been agreed by the sounds of it. Still with a couple of things to sort out is what Rick said. So when that happens, I mean, we've been talking about it for a while now, but how easy is the decision that whoever the new owner is has to make in regards to Carl Robinson? Because I mean, he's our under Roland, he's got the best win percentage.
I don't think it's an easy decision at all. I mean, if they might come in, obviously, if they're going to come in with their own plans to do things, you know, not knowing who it is, how much do they know about this league and what it takes to get out of this league and the kind of manager it would take to get out of this league? Because you're not going to put in a very, very experienced international Premier, ex-Premier manager. In, you know, you need someone who knows what the grit and the dirt is in this division.
Mm.
And I think, you know, Nathan's always calling Carl Marmite. You know, yeah. You love him and hate him. And I'm thinking, you know, and I totally agree. I think he does divide the people. I think, and like I said at the start of the show, he did yesterday what we wanted him to do the week before. And you're thinking, well, you can't berate him for, you know, what we want, what thought was the correct decision the week before.
I mean, if it weren't for a freak deflection, we will be talking about the perfect away performance yesterday. Yeah. I mean, I was getting ready to, you know, as we go into injury time, I'm always preparing my what I'm going to say at full time and whatnot. And I had some, you know, perfect away performance, wondering how on earth they only won by one goal. Charlton's third clean sheet on the road in a row, haven't conceded away from home since Boxing Day. I had all that ready to go. It's obviously it's my fault that happened. But, I mean, we were so close to what would have been a good performance and what people would have been looking at. Oh, look, four wins out of the last five. Carl's got them playing now. We want them again.
But it's going to sound funny. I mean, go back to the playoff final at Wembley. We score first, and we were famous for having the tightest of tight defences.
Mm.
And you went, we went 1-0 up and thought, you know what, this is it. We're going to win this 1-0. And you've got to think, that finished 4-4. We want, you know, and we conceded four goals in the game, which we never thought we would do.
Mm.
And you've got to think to yourself, it happens. It just does happen in football. And, you know, it's two games which have happened next to each other, which is why it feels so raw.
Mm.
If they'd been 10 games apart, you know, we wouldn't even be talking about, oh, you know, we've conceded again late.
Mm.
It's only because, you know, it was Oxford and it was Donny.
But at the same time, like, you know, the stats do sort of add up. The goals we concede most are in the last 10 minutes.
But with the stats, the most common time, it's across football, the most common time for a goal to be scored in a football match is the 90th minute.
Because it
takes in any goal scored after 90.
Yeah.
So you've got to think, if that's the most common time to score, the highest ratio of goals are scored after the 90th minute, it's not just us. Like I said, and it's benefited us this season.
And so at the same time, I can turn the stat around. So from in the last half an hour of games, 20-40. We've scored 55% of our goals have come in the last half an hour, including 20% in the last 10 minutes. So maybe it is, you know, just how things go. But we it's not like we always finish badly. We have sometimes finished quite strongly as well. We very rarely score goals. In fact, we haven't scored a single goal in between the 41st minute and the 50th minute. And that includes half-time, so that's an extra 15 minutes that we haven't scored in there as well. But interesting stat there.
Maybe if we did come out at half-time and the other team didn't, we might score.
I don't know, if you watch the crossbar challenge, we never score in that either. Right, Evs James tweeted in last night saying, evening, we just cannot kill a game off. Why take De Silva off? Lennon is not up to scratch yet. KR does not read the game when we have less than 5 minutes left. It's he who needs extra coaching. I like him, but he's missing something. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, people always... When goals have gone in late last couple of games, people will straight away look at the manager and say, oh, the tactics wrong. But as we sort of said, I mean, we've tried both things you could do in other than making no changes in the last couple of games, and they both ended in tears.
But if you reversed it and we were 1-0 down and he made those subs and we equalised the 94th minute, would everyone be going, oh, what a genius he was for making the subs? They probably wouldn't. They'd be saying, oh, you know, it's the players. So, you know, it's... Carl can only do so much to influence the game. You know, he's chosen the players who have trained well, who he thinks are the best players to do the job. You know, and sometimes it is the players have to look at themselves. And like I say, anyone who's seen the highlights of yesterday, see that deflection and think, you know, that could have spun anywhere. Mm. And it landed on the noggin of their right back. So I think it's harsh to come out and say, oh, you know, I blame Carl for this draw. Because you're thinking, you know, if before the game... You know, on the run we're on, if you say, you know, take a point up at Doncaster on a pitch which isn't great, would you take it? And I'd presume more than 50% of the fans would probably say, yeah, I'll take a point up there. Mm. You know, because, you know, you always adjust your sights. If you go a goal up, you want to win. If you go a goal down, you say, right, we'll take an equaliser, we'll take a point from here. Mm. So
reminds me of when I went to an away game at Norwich a few years ago, and I remember I was saying to a mate during the week, so I'm going up, we're up at Norwich on Saturday, and he said, oh yeah, what are you thinking? I said, well, you know, I'll tell you what, I remember before the game said, I'll take a point as long as we don't do anything stupid like chuck away a two-goal lead in the last minute, drew 2-2, but so I was still frustrated at the end of it, even though we got the point that I said I'd take. Right, Fry Fury tweets in, 3 wins in our last 13 league games is not good enough. The form table for our last 15 games has us placed in 17th, not good enough. Robinson disappearing straight down the tunnel rather than showing acknowledgement to us travelling fans yesterday, not good enough. He wants a new owner and he wants a new manager, says Fry Fury. I mean, at full time, I mean, I say... The frustration does boil over. I mean, you would prefer... I mean, I have to admit, I didn't particularly see what Carl did at full-time, but Fry's saying he might have just wandered off down the tunnel there.
Which isn't normally Carl's style. Normally, he tells the players to go around, you know, regardless. I'd read on, you know, different accounts of people being frustrated that the players didn't acknowledge the fans, and so, you know, the noise of the fans was mentioned by quite a few people yesterday during the game, and say about the constant singing and support. So... You can understand the players feel as down, and maybe they, you know, but you think to yourself, well, it's a long way to go on a Saturday up to Donny for a point. So make some effort. Or did they think, oh, if we go over, are we going to get booed, or we're going to get... Mm. And it's hard. I mean, I think, you know, they'd probably look at that and go, no, we should have made more of an effort, if that's true, but... It's a hard one to call with that.
Yeah. Ray Bates tweeted in earlier saying we need some news to break in a bit, or Luis Mendes and Charlton Live are going to have to talk about salvaging a draw from a 1-0 good hiding we were giving to Range, Doncaster Rovers. So unfortunately, nothing interesting has broken, so we have had to talk about yesterday's game. Colin Hart says, I've always wondered why managers make subs when you're running the show. Never got it and never will. Players cold. I remember playing in the Kent League. He was subbed on and then the final whistle went. that probably says about your performance that day, Colin, that you were only subbed on just as the final whistle was about to go. But, I mean, that is the point. I mean, do you look at the fact that we're 1-0 up and we're defending pretty comfortably? Do you all of a sudden think, well, actually, I'm not going to change anything. I'm going to go through without making any subs. I mean, you don't often see it.
You don't often see it. I mean, you could probably go back quite a few seasons to when we didn't actually make a substitution. But again, it's like I say, he's saying, thinking, OK, we're 1-0 up. We've got Bradford at home on Tuesday. Do I risk Fozzy getting a knock in the last 5 minutes? Do I risk losing, you know, one of my more important players? Or do I say, you know what, I'll bring him off. Just so, you know, looking a game ahead and maybe looking too soon. Mm. Again, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If he leaves Fozzy on and we don't make any subs and we concede in the last minute, everyone's going to say, why didn't you make these subs? Why didn't you put on Jacko? Why didn't you put on Lennon? So
it's a no-win situation. It sometimes,
is, you know, and also with the, oh, you know, Carl's got to go. And apart from, I think Gary Monk's the only manager who I rate who's out of work at the moment.
Has he gone somewhere? Have I made that up?
He got sacked by Borough.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the only one who I think of who's. But again, he's.
Would he come down to League One?
And I'd love to know who everyone thinks.
Well, there's always someone out there.
There are, but you've got to think yourself, well, what name springs to mind? You go, you know what, he'd be really good, a good fit for Charlton. But not just a good fit for the players, but a good fit for us as a club. Yeah,
but don't forget the timing of it now. There's no transfer window left, so it'd be the same as when Carl came in with a transfer window. But sometimes you get a manager who'll come in and there's no transfer window left and they want to try and change the style, but they won't have a chance to get their own personnel in. And, you know, that is something we've suffered from a lot over the last few years, is inconsistency in managers and just shaking things up, and that can really take the momentum out of something. So that's why, I mean, timing wise it would be strange now. I think for me, you know, I'm certainly not in a camp that's calling for Carl's head, even if there are some people out there after a couple of disappointing results over the last few weeks.
I mean, you've got to think, look at the start of the season, it was working for us. We were scoring, you know, we were looking good, you know, we got ourselves into sort of like a good position in the top six. You know, I think the one time we were in top two or three. Mm. And so, you know, it's the same manager, virtually the same players. Okay, we've missed Clarkey, who I think has been a huge miss for us. And I don't think he'll bring Pierce back on Tuesday night.
A chance to be on the bench, he said.
Oh, so, yeah. But only because I doubt
he'll risk him, I doubt.
Yeah, so, you know, but it's still the same players. A new manager comes in and goes, okay, well, I'm going to play 4-4-2. Well, does that get the best out of Josh, or is Josh actually better playing as a one with a 10 behind him? So, you know, as he's been playing all season, you know, you say a good, you know, you're going to have to coach these players to play your way, and we've got attacking wingers. You know, you're going to say, right, let's go five at the back. I mean, we've seen Marshall play as a full back in the cup game, and, you know, he did a good job there, but it's when we played three with Jacko at the back. So you know, whoever you bring in, you know, are they going to change it that much? Are they going to, or are you going to get, you know, look at what Chris Powell's done at Southend. You know, first time a Southend manager's got three wins on a bounce, a new one's gone in. Because, you know, the Powell effect. Mm. He's organised them, but he knows this division. He knows what he can do. And he's looked at his players there and gone, right, this is what we can do well, and we're going to stick with that. You know, they beat Wigan yesterday, who have been phenomenal this season. So, you know, but I don't think a new owner coming in would suddenly go to Southend and say, right, can we make you an offer?
That's pretty unlikely. I don't know, Heckenbottom left Barnsley, didn't he, just after he signed a new contract with him, so you never know. But I think that's unlikely. London Air Geezer says, Robinson must hope that the new owners aren't installed before Tuesday, or it could be a bit like Parkey versus Swindon, which, of course, Parkey, when new owners at the time came in, Parkey had a really bad game early on against Swindon and soon got the elbow. And was asked to leave the club. Right, on the chat online.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My forum, Mendonca and Astor said, surely Carl must be pulling his hair out, Louis. Surely the players should have learned from last week. I mean, you'd think after it's happened last week, the players would be thinking everything in their power to stop it this week, which is why I think that when that ball landed on the edge of the 6-yard box and all of a sudden four players were rushing on it, it's because they wanted to be on top of that shot and make sure it didn't happen. And, you know, I mean, so you'll read some quotes in the South London Press tomorrow from Chris Solly. He sort of said something along the lines of, you know, if that shot was an inch to the left, it would have hit whoever deflected it square, and that would have been it. It would have been blocked, it would have been cleared, and we would have won.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. There's so many bodies. I mean, there's no nice way to sort of like concede a goal, you know, but it could have spun in off someone's heel because there's so many people there. I think they, you know, fundamentally they did the right thing defensively. And I think, you know, the fact that Carl's frustrated about it, let's say he's not, you know, throwing cups and chairs and pointing at the referee and stuff. He's said himself, you know, it's an unlucky deflection, you know, and I can't point the finger at anybody.
He did point at the referee a little bit.
Yeah, but you know,
he likes that.
Alex, has to go somewhere.
Yeah, Alex Mon says, same old, snatching a draw from the jaws of victory. A professional team should be able to see a game out, but part of our problem is the lack of creativity and goals. We flatter to deceive on many occasions, look good until we get to the final third. Not enough chances created, and when we do create an opportunity, there aren't enough players in the box to take advantage to get ourselves promoted. We have to go 4-4-2 so we get another striker, preferably one who unlike Big Josh, isn't goal shy, into the box. If we scored more, we'd win. Simple. And that's an interesting point. I mean, we will come on to, you know, why do we concede so many late goals, but later on in the show. But I mean, there is a theory. I mean, the theory is that if your attacking players do their job and score more than one goal in a game, or even then last week they scored twice, it takes pressure off the defence and they're less nervy at the end of a game.
Is that true, though? I mean, you're thinking so.
Well, if they're 2-0 up, you're not nervous.
But
then
2-1, and then 2-1 with 5 minutes to go, do those nerves not almost double, as it were?
Mm. Well, not so, if it's 2-0, though, I guess.
But you can put that in at any score. But I mean, to be honest, I go back to the mid 80s, to when I first started watching Charlton, and we've never been good at winding down the clock, and you know, in the last 5 minutes of keeping it in. I used to dread it where we used to get one of our players, you know what, I'll take it down to the corner flag and keep it there. Really, the only person, apart from what, doing it against Cardiff a couple of seasons ago,
against Forest,
was it Forest? Yeah. We kept it for about sort of like four minutes,
yeah.
But we've never been good, and it's, you know, I can't remember a sort of like a Charlton team who have been able to hold the ball in that corner. We've given it away, you know, and it gets flown up the other end. So it's just not something we do well. I'm thinking, if you don't do it well, don't try it. Don't attempt it. Don't try and kill it. Like I say, for me, it just comes down to that third sub. Mm. If you don't make it, I think we win that game. And it's as simple as that, really.
Martin says, it's no coincidence that since Robbo dropped Aribo, we've not won. The usual scapegoat, Lennon, getting blamed for yesterday when it's the offensive players not taking their chances. Richard Justin pointed out, as I mentioned earlier, they did bring on Sarr at the Valley versus Doncaster, and it shored us up. They were bigger than us. Still, I feel we are physically too short generally in key positions. Now, Roger Trar said, I thought supporters were really vocal yesterday, the best I've heard for a while, and yesterday was my 80th stadium out of the 92 following Charlton. That's not a bad record at all there. Roger Sebo quite correctly points out that yesterday was very similar to the game at AFC Wimbledon last year, where we were you know, winning 1-0 early on, cruising it seemed, and then conceded a goal in the last minute. Matthias came over from Sheffield for yesterday's game, said he's absolutely feeling gutted about yesterday's result, but great to be amongst the Charlton fans. Said sorry he didn't get to see me, we were going to try and meet up, but we couldn't. He said getting out of Sheffield was a nightmare because Leeds were in town, which is always a nightmare, I'm sure. Richard Justin again pointing out, ahead of as we said, ahead of Tuesday's game with Bradford here at the Valley, that Grayson has been appointed by Bradford. He got promoted out of League One with Blackpool, Leeds, Huddersfield and Preston. So he's certainly got a good track record, and that certainly keeps Bradford's hat very much in that ring. Charlton XL said, in regard to Reeves, I think it's easier to play without fear for a team like Milton Keynes Dons. We're a bigger club with bigger ambition, so pressure sometimes separates the average from the good. Do you think that could be it? It could be more pressure on Reeves that's making it a bit more difficult for him to find the back of the net at times this season?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll take a question on geography, please, Louis, because I don't know the answer to that one. No, I don't know. Because everyone thinks they're a big club. Yeah. You know, we are where we are. We've got the history, we've got the ground, you know, but, okay, Milton Keynes, they didn't, but I think, you know, there's just probably as much pressure playing for any team as there is all through the divisions. It's just... you know, the rewards are greater in a Premiership and the Championship than they are here financially, but the pressure is probably the same. I mean, you're still going out trying to do your job because you're thinking, if you don't do your job, you don't play. If you don't play, you know, there's every chance, you know, when it comes for contract, you get released. So, you know, there's pressure all the way around. I don't think it's that with Reeves. I honestly think it's because it's pre-season and he just hasn't been up to game speed. And like I say, if he thinks 3-4 games in a row, because I don't have the thing in front of me, but, you know, I don't know how many games
he's done that.
Yeah, how many games he's actually played to get that kind of... Look at Marshall now. Marshall, I was one of Marshall's biggest critics. And I think he's had 6-7 games on a row now, and each week he's impressing me more and more. We're getting to see the Marshall which we know is a danger. So maybe Reeves is just in that camp.
Right, message on Jimmy Seed's grandson Jim Dalton asked on the forum, it'd be interesting to see the stats for when it's a Bauer and Pierce partnership. He says he really struggled when one of them is missing. But now, so I looked that up just for the show. Now, those two only played together, as in starting together at centre-back, 9 times this season. They all came very early on, before the up to and including the 23rd of September. So, but when they did play, so those 9 games they played, we won 5 of them, which was 56%. And now every other game where it's either been only one of them or neither of them playing at the same time, we played 30 and then won 13, so 43%. So our win percentage does go down a bit when there's only one or not both or neither of them. But of course, I mean, it's a very small sample of games where they have played together, only 9 games.
I think 9 is big enough for a sample. I think Pierce is an organiser. That's the thing. He's a vocalist at the back there. And, you know, we've always said about how quiet sometimes our defence can be, you know, G-ing people up. And, you know, I sometimes think Solly's actually part Trappist monk because you don't hear him. You know, you don't hear them. You know, Josh is organising at corners. And that's for centre-forward coming back and getting people organised. And you don't, you know, Jake's quite vocal, which, you know, it's quite good. But there's not a lot of noise coming out of those two centre-halves. Whether Konsa's, you know, just concentrating on his own game, you know, Bauer maybe if he's shouting at people in German would be a bit more effective. But, you know, Pierce is an organiser and I think that's it shows when they play together.
Yeah. Bristol Addict on the Channel 9 forum says, never mind conceding over a quarter of goals in the last 10 minutes of matches, why haven't we been scoring enough goals before then, especially when we've been the dominant team, to make these late goals irrelevant? Now, if you look at the league table, in our 4 column, we've got 40 goals. Now, Shrewsbury Town in second in the league also have 40 goals. But other than that, every team above us in the top 6, Bradford have got 47, Rotherham have scored 52, Blackburn have scored 56, Scunthorpe have scored 46, and Wigan have scored 56. So if you look at, you know, we're on average probably 5 or 6, 7 goals behind the teams above us there, and that's costing us, you know, big time. If those second goals do go in, third goals do go in, then we will see those games out, because it doesn't matter if there's a last-minute goal, because we win 2-1, 3-1.
But it's always, well, apart from the season where Powley got us up with, you know, and we scored goals from all over, you know, I think we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, about getting goals from all over the pitch, looking for your defence to get you 10, looking for your midfield to get you sort of like 15 to 20 spread across all the players. OK, we lost, you know, Holmes, who was, you know, was good for goals. You know, I mean, if your strikers aren't doing it, then your midfield have got to step up. And like I say, Reeves has got to step up. Jake's got to, you know, get himself in there. And like I say, I feel sorry for Aribo. You know, Jake's not done anything bad, but I don't think he's deserved to come straight back in. And I think with Aribo, is quite dangerous and got his head down and could shoot and was, you know, with the goals he scored, you know, proves that he could be a threat. He could get sort of like 5-7 from midfield.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough one, because, I mean, Jake Forsakaski has been one of our players of the season for me, and I think Carl thinks that he adds more going back, possibly. So I think that's why he makes that decision. Well, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. Still got plenty of emails to go through and to hear your opinions here on Charlton Live Studio at charltonlive.co.uk. If you want to have a say before the end of the show, or you can tweet us at Charlton Live. Quick break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Jackson, it's in! Yeah! 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 Jackson! Woo-hoo!
Charlton Live.
So welcome back. This is Charlton Live on your Sunday evening, coming to you live from the Valley here on Maritime Radio. We're looking back at yesterday's 1-1 draw with Doncaster Rovers. Donny getting their equaliser in the 94th minute after Charlton missed an absolute hatful of chances to put the game to bed. Before that, now we've got some emails in. The first one comes from Daniel Crawford, who says, hi, Louis and all. Really don't understand people calling for the head of Robinson, although I think the decision to take off De Silva and replace him with Lennon was and proved to be a crazy one. He has taken us from a crumbling mess under the reins of Luzon, Slade and others to challenging for a playoff spot with absolutely zero support in terms of finances and contact from the man we shall not mention. Just think what the man could do with full backing from the board and with finances. He's shown he's a shrewd businessman, bringing in players such as Fosu. I really believe he is the man to take us forward. Lennon, on the other hand, oh dear, that's two games where he's been at the centre of it all. Absolutely shocking. And said, as said before, he shouldn't have been on the pitch to replace De Silva. He has been brought on for a mere 180 seconds to do his job as a defender and ran around like a headless chicken with no spatial awareness, leaving two players unmarked and the space for the predictable equaliser. A new contract, seriously? Surely wages could be better spent elsewhere. He says, cheers for making my Mondays more bearable. So that's from Daniel there. Thanks for your email. Now, so I did mention earlier on the show that there is a possibility that people, you know, that perhaps the left midfielder, who at the time was McGuinness, should have been in that area as well. And there is the craziness you get from, you know, the last minute goal mouth scrambling that happens. But you know, I've seen a lot of fans questioning Harry Lennon over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I heard there was quite a funny song going around on the train yesterday, which, I mean, I'm not at all one for singing against your own players. But it's just the rhyming was quite funny on it. But I mean, you've seen a few fans now.
Yeah,
targeting Harry. No, at the same time, you know, there are people. I mean, Jake from the News Shopper said the other day that he felt that Lennon's a better player than Ezri Konsa. So there are players, people who back Harry Lennon as well. We can't forget that.
There are. I wouldn't say he was better than Konsa, because I think Konsa's probably got a bit more flexibility around the pitch. You could put him at right back. You can put him in the midfield, where Lennon's, what I would say, is an old-fashioned centre-half. You know, he's a big guy. You expect him to, you know, either get his head on it or wipe the guy out. But he doesn't seem to be doing either. Again, though, we remember he's been out for a year. So, you know, whether he'd have been, if Pierce had been fit, I've got a theory that Lennon possibly could have been off on loan somewhere just to get him, you know, into a consistent run of games. It's difficult. I don't want to be critical of him, but I think it's the right move if he's dropped.
Mm.
You know, without saying, you know, pointing a finger.
Well, he was dropped, wasn't he, of course, for Saturday's game. And then and Bauer came in, and Bauer played really well. You know, I've always been one to say that, I think last season in particular, that Bauer has a mistake in him, but I think he's been pretty, I can't remember too many this season.
Yeah, he does get turned sometimes, and he has misplaced a pass, and a whippet's gone past him. But I don't know, I haven't heard anything about Naby's fitness, to how close he is to getting back as well. So, you know, I think Lennon would be possibly fifth choice to me. Pearson Bauer first, you know, then Konsa with Naby, and then Lennon as a fifth choice. So you're thinking, if we're playing with a fifth choice centre half, is that's not your best team? Mm.
Chris Davin emails in, same old from Mr. Robinson. Once again, we drop points, conceding late from a winning position. Apart from sometimes baffling team selections, Reeves being anywhere near the starting lineup and Aribo on the bench, for example, we should still be comfortably in the playoff places, not struggling to hang on to the top six's shirt tails. If it's we're talking about the takeover now. It says, if it's a done deal, as we've been told, then the new owners won't be impressed. As for the famous it's a done deal tweet, we can all say this to get attention, as eventually it will turn out to be right. On seeing that tweet, Twitter went nuts. Gifts of champagne, opening, dancing, etc., gaining loads of retweets, and so having the desired effect. It's a done deal. Robinson is leaving Charlton. Maybe next week, next month, 5 years' time, but it's going to happen one day. Should this be tweeted out? Irresponsible, ridiculous nonsense, not even backed up. And finally, when questioned on the tweet, the originator of the tweet is rather less confident in and when and by whom. Getting back to Mr. Robinson, he's a lucky man, gets a lot more support than he deserves for his actual performance. I think, obviously, now it's out in the open. Chris is referring to Rick Everett's tweet there about the takeover that the majority of the show was based on Thursday, because the done deal tweet came out. Now, you know, reading between the lines, I mean, like I said on Thursday show, I did speak to Rick on the day, and I think when he said done deal, he said that a price has been agreed. There's still a couple of bits to be done in terms of that. So the fact that we've got a price agreed is, you know, a deal that's been done in a way, but the actual paperwork hasn't been signed or anything like that. So maybe fans were getting the wrong end of the stick, or maybe people saw that tweet and thought it's done, get the champagne out. And
yeah. I mean, I read that tweet and thought, you know, and went home, said to my wife, you know, I don't think we're going to be cracking open the champagne tonight, but maybe tomorrow, you know. And you know, then suddenly nothing happens, you know. As I've said before on the show, it'll happen when it happens. It's you never know with legalities and, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and, you know, something gets thrown out at the last moment. If a deal's been agreed, it's coming down to the minutiae of things. So I can understand people. I can understand that guy's reaction to that tweet, to be honest. I mean, I don't think Rick did it to become famous or get retweets.
Rick doesn't need that. He knows, Richard Corley admitted it himself. You know, Rick is
better informed.
Yeah, in terms of the takeover, he's probably the best informed person out there other than Roland Duchatelet.
But you can understand how it can be misconstrued. Yeah. When someone read that, they're thinking, shall I make my way down to the valley because there's going to be a camera crew? You know, we can all put on party hats and get out blowers, you know, and bid adieu to Roland.
Daniel Farmer's email comes in and says, another game, another famous KR quote, we need to be more ruthless. How many times has he said that and no mention of the poor defending for their goal at all? He said it was an unlucky deflection. It was quite funny, actually, yesterday. David Norris on Twitter, Nozza, was going through. I suddenly got about 5 retweets off him, and he'd gone back through all my tweets over the season where we're talking about chances being missed, all the way back to the Plymouth game. It's not the first time it's been said, and Dan's quite right to point that out. He says, what about Lennon's positioning? That was awful. Why take De Silva off? Bringing on Kai, did he offer anything? He didn't seem to do too much yesterday when he came on, Dan. I'll give Robinson until the end of the season. If he doesn't get us into the playoffs, then he has failed, considering he has a good squad now to work with. Poor management skills and not being able to close off games, bringing on attacking players when we need to shut up shop at times. I'm 50-50 on him now. Poor form in the last few months, only a few wins and really bad tactics, which is being found out. And he goes on the 4-2-3-1. Oh my God, change it up now and then, please. Carl says he loves his attacking football, but defending is equally important. Please, someone tell him that. Tuesday is massive. Can't afford to lose because Bradford will go 5 points clear. I am going to Milton Keynes next Saturday, which after yesterday, I don't know why. Cheers, geezers. Thanks for your email, Dan. That's a good email. And I'm glad you're going up to MK because away games are always fun, even if we don't win. I mean, the formation comes up again there. I mean, it's what it's. You sound like a broken record here. If we score that second goal with that attacking player, then what happens at the last 5 minutes doesn't really matter. But because we haven't, what happens at the last 10 minutes, 5 minutes does matter. And again, we haven't closed the game out, so you can see the frustrations.
You can, but it's all if. You know, if my aunt had a winkle, she'd be my uncle. So it's
take your word for that.
It's, you know, you can't. As I said, and like I say, we could probably play back. We could probably not come in tonight and played an old show, and no one would have noticed because we've been saying the same things. It's nothing you can do to warrant it. You know, you can blame so much. You know, as football fans, we look for sometimes we're not getting the result we want. We look for, you know, a scapegoat, someone to blame. Is it the pitch? Is it the referee? You know, is it a tactical decision? Is it a player doing this? Kakai, I think he's one of those players who needs to start from the very beginning. I don't think he's one of those players who's going to be interested if he comes on in the last 10 minutes. He's going to think, well, I've been sitting on the bench for 80 minutes. I'm not going to, you know, bust a gut now because it's not going to really do much. I think if you see him, I was surprised Reeve started. I'd have started with Kakai in the Mavididi, you know, free role, as it were. And I think we'd have probably comfortably won. Because I think if he'd been in that position where Reeves was, where Reeves passed back to McGuinness, Kakai would have taken it on. He'd have shot. And I think, you know, sometimes you look at the player you're bringing on. You can bring Jacko on for 5 minutes. Jacko's got the mentality. He's game ready. Lennon we've talked about. But Kakai in 83rd minute, it's a bit of a waste of a sub as such. So
Stephen Reader says, never have or never will be a fan of Carl Robinson. As stated last week, the tactics are boring and spouts the same old rubbish every week. Aribo was asked to score more goals. Can't if he's on the bench. Same with Carlin. Both in form and both out of the team. If in Marshall, we have a winger so prime for a 4-4-2 formation, but we never play it. We continue to play one up top who can't score for Toffee. Give him a partner, as stated last week. Just win games, put teams under pressure, for God's sake. It's Division 3. Here's hoping he will soon be gone, and Roland too. And that's from Steve Reader. Cheers for your email, Steve. This one's from Bob Knight. Says, hi, first, I've been of the opinion to give Robinson until the end of the season. I've changed my mind. What has become obvious is that he's totally out of his depth tactically to close a game out. I watched the game and Doncaster were clueless. Why take De Silva off? It's resulted in McGuinness playing left back. Jackson was already on, but playing number 10. It is not the player's fault if they're put out of position. There was no need for a change of formation. If you make changes when it's working, change like for like. Tactically, set plays look random. We are physically too weak and inexperienced against the bigger sides, and trying to hold on to a lead is not working. Subs should be brought on to pressurise the opposition on the ball to stop them delivering the ball into the box at the end. If we sit back and invite the opposition on, we can expect even more of these late goals and failure to qualify for the playoffs. The takeover can't come soon enough, and hopefully a new experienced manager, one who is not so one dimensional. Bert Palmer sent us a DM on Twitter. Thanks for that, Bert. It says, strikers score goals. If you don't play strikers, what do you expect? It's like playing cricket without a wicket keeper. Again, I mean, a lot of people are bringing up the fact we play one up top. Now, of course, with our formation, the idea is that the midfielders will get themselves into the penalty area. But when you're not scoring the goals, and when the goal total is low as it is, people are going to look at the fact that there's only one striker on the pitch, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, you've got Marshall and Fozzie, you know, running down the wings, you know, Josh up front. So we're almost playing sometimes three up, you know. But they want to see the two strikers, which we tried, and, you know, it didn't really work, you know, with a Jose alongside Josh. So I can understand, you know, Carl keeping with what he thinks he knows best. And if that's what he's been drilling into them all season, people say, well, if it's not working, but, you know, you that's what he's been drilling into them. If he just say, right, we're going to go 4-4-2 now, you know, does that mean the defensive midfielder is going to sit deeper? Does that mean the attacking midfielder is going to not be as attacking as much because you've got two strikers up there? You don't want sort of like 4 or 5 in a box because we get caught on the break, we're going to be short of numbers. I think the fluidity of a system, you know, it's taken me, you know, a while to sort of almost appreciate it, because, you know, old-fashioned, I like a 4-4-2. But I think, you know, you've got to mix it up to see, you know, sometimes who you're playing against, who's the most dangerous player. You know, when we played against Warsaw, the most dangerous player, we sort of like let him have a free role. You're thinking, that's why I want my defensive midfielder to be sitting. You know, if you're playing a solid 4-4-2, you're in two banks, your midfield are going to be too close to each other. Cashy likes coming for the ball. He likes getting the ball from the centre halves, passing it, you know. But if you're playing two solid banks, there's just going to be too much in there. And then the opposition will go, right, here, we'll put 5 into midfield, so we're going to outnumber you there. And before you know it, they're breaking down, having 2-on-1s on the wingers. You know, you've got to say, if we're set up for that way, you know, the team's drilled, it should, in theory, be working. And I'd say for half a season, it was. We started getting the injuries. And, you know, every team gets injuries. We tended to get a lot more in positions where we know we needed a bit more cover. And we knew that. And like I say, but for the first half of the season, we weren't complaining, we weren't whining, we weren't calling for Robinson. And I think you've got to look at a season as a whole. We're still seventh. We've still got more wins and losses. You know, OK, we're not scoring bundles of goals, but we're not being tonked week in, week out. So
I'm getting nostalgic. You just said we're still seven. I'm getting nostalgic for when we our first season after relegation from the Championship, and everyone kept saying, we're still fifth, we're still fifth, we're still fifth, and then we finished like 11th. Kenneth Sinyard said, on the takeover, hopefully a fresh start. Rejoice that I, like many fans, can return to the Valley after the disaster this regime has heaped on our club. I'm sure many of the fans will return. It's in our blood. Well done to all the fans that brought this about and held the faith. Thank you for your support. There's a big rebuilding job to do, and all get behind the team and push for a promotion. Come on, you Reds. So that's a call for a return to the Valley when the takeover is finally done, which hopefully will be sooner rather than later. Right, quick break. I asked a couple of questions before the show. Will we still make the playoffs? And why are we conceding late goals? I've got plenty of answers to that, so we'll get through those after this break.
into the box. It's a flick on from McGinnis.
Yeah!
Oh, shoulder grabbed the equaliser. I think it could have been Bauer on the line, but McGinnis's initial header. And quite how we've done it, I've no idea, but Charlton are back on level terms.
So welcome back, Charlton Live, here on your Sunday evening, about 10 minutes or less than 10 minutes left to go here, so we're going to get through these tweets. Stephen Jones actually just said, we should be thanking Robbo with the injuries we've had instead of shooting him down. We ain't all perfect, let's still back him regardless. Playoffs is well within reach, 100%. Right, I tweeted out the stat earlier that 27% of the league goals we've conceded in this campaign have come in the final 10 minutes of games. Why do you think we are susceptible to late strikes? Gary McKendry says it's a lack of leadership at the back. Once Jason Pearce is back to full fitness, we will have the stability we've been missing for months. Stephen Jones says it's a lack of composure and experience closing out games. Sitting so deep and letting teams come onto us is no good. Get it in the opposition half and keep the ball. Robbo has to teach game management. It's as simple as that. Katie Buckland says because the subs we are forced to make just weaken our team most of the time, end up having to take off our best players due to fatigue or fitness, which in turn weakens the team both offensively and defensively. Wayne says it's because our group of players have better things on their mind. They're weak-minded and they keep losing focused and so like that. Alex says, as much as I like Carl, I think his game management has to be questioned. We were starting to be pegged back by Doncaster a long time before he made any subs, and when he did make a change, none were effective. We have to be more proactive if we want to win promotion. Matt Vine says, pressure, lack of confidence due to not putting teams out of sight. The defence will get blamed, but ultimately the strikers should make their lives easier. David Letchfield says, poor management as we should be killing games off, but instead we all just back and try and defend and fail miserably at it. Dominic Roseby says, we concede late goals because Harry Lennon is in the defence. Daniel Crawford says Harry Lennon as well. But Daryl Hall says, because we don't take our chances, we play out the way we play, we is set to play out from the back for 80 minutes, then defend whatever lead we have. Dwayne says the last 5 minutes should be called the laxative zones. I assume because that's because we're now loose at the back. And Andrew says, is it a lack of fitness, a lack of depth of the squad, a lack of discipline? They're all questions that we don't know the answer to. Now, Mark, you said you wanted to tell a little story.
Yeah, I did. It's only because everyone said, oh, you know, it's all doom and gloom and it's all bad news. It's not all bad news. The reason I wasn't at Doncaster yesterday is that I was busy going round seeing my family just to let them know that in August, me and my wife are going to have twins.
Oh, congratulations.
So there's going to be two new Charlton fans,
yeah,
who are going to see a club which is getting back on its feet. And I just said, you know what, I said to my wife, I'm coming on radio, and I said, you know what, I'm going to say, tell everyone, because we got...
Is there any chance you can train them to be defenders?
they couldn't do a worse job.
Oh,
possibly
well,
they can do a worse job now.
That's actually brilliant news, Mark. I'm really pleased to hear that news live on Charlton Live, so well done.
It's exclusive for you.
Yeah, exclusive Charlton Live story. Mark is going to have twins. Excellent news. Well done, Mark.
Thank you.
Still lead in the old pencil. right. I asked the just before we have a very brief look ahead to Tuesday's game against Bradford here, whether fans still think we will finish in the playoffs. Lewis Katz says yes. James Fern says a top six finish is a real possibility, in my opinion. But would this team prove their worth at Wembley? He said he personally can't see it. Dempsey says really can't see it. Dropping too many points against teams we need to get the three from. Have to beat both Bradford and Shrewsbury at home minimum now to give us a lift. Paul Crisp is still confident. He says yes, we'll finish sixth. Freddie says if we win Tuesday and we press onwards, then yes. If not, then no. Maybe a takeover will create the buzz around the place that pushes us over the line. Chrissy says the 5 points dropped in the past two games doesn't bode well, especially when the pressure games come in the running for such an attack-minded team. The continual failure to not take our chances means that our flimsy defence is going to be under pressure at the end of games. Matt Broad says, looking over our shoulder, we have only just 6 points back to 17th. Dropping points like we have been will be costly, but he still is keeping the faith. Tegsy says, only if we start scoring more than one goal a match. Too many games where we seem to be holding on with at least 30 minutes left to play. High time we started spanking teams and being more aggressive. Mentality plays a big part, and that has to stem from the management downwards. Reese says, no, at the end of the day, the only reason we're not in the bottom half is because of our form from August to October. I mean, that is how the form the league table works, Reece. It says even the three wins recently were against out of form teams. Every game we're left holding on, and the players don't have the fight or ability to hold on most of the time. We lack any sort of ability to take our chances and seeing off games. I used to think it was bad luck, but it happens so often now. It's not just having any decent finishers on the team, so I don't really understand why Zairo Okaikai hasn't played yet to prove they can do that. And don't forget, we had a Jota on the bench yesterday as well, so it'll be interesting to see what part he plays in the rest of the season as well. Keith says, not if we keep throwing games in stoppage time. How many times have we let late goals in this season? And Roland, I know it's not the real Roland, but Roland and Celine says, no, that we're not going to make the playoffs. Dan says, congratulations to you, Mark, for your good news. Stephen says, Simon Grayson as new Bradford boss, so it's going to be a tougher game now. New manager syndrome might take hold on Tuesday, and that segues us nicely into looking ahead. What do you think about new manager syndrome, Mark? Is it going to be difficult for us?
No, I mean,
Bradford in horrible form.
If he's turned up, you know, today they've probably had a day off, so his first day training with them will be tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what it said on the Bradford
statement.
It's
not really going to be, you know, have that much of effect. I don't believe, because the assistant or the caretaker manager would have got them organised for us, and had. I can't see him coming in and saying, right, we're going to do this. I mean, you don't know how much he knows about Bradford's players or how much he's been. You know, he's been out of his division, hasn't he? He's been in the league above. So I don't think it's going to make much of an odds to us. I'm glad they drew, so they weren't on, you know, turning round as sort of like a losing streak.
Well, yeah, they had the same last minute equaliser we had. So any sort of,
and you got to think that was against Bury.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we smashed Bury 1-0, of course.
So it's still 3 points. Yeah. So
looking ahead to Tuesday's game, just in the last minute or so of the show. I mean, are you looking at changes now, mate? I mean, we had, I think it was Reece there who mentioned, why is Zairo not getting the minutes now? We haven't saw Kaikai for the last 10 minutes. Didn't do much in that spell yesterday. We saw them both last week, and neither of them, you know, covered themselves in glory, but of course neither of them played much football.
No, I don't think Zairo's fitness is up to start in a game. Like I say, I think Kaikai is the kind of player who needs to start from the beginning to be interested in a game. So me personally, Tuesday night, would I change? I'd drop Jake and bring Joe back. I'd put Kaikai in for Ben Reeves, and then, you know, keep the defence as is. So, you know, I think just two little tweaks. And last season's Bradford game was my favourite game of the season.
One or draw.
But
entertaining game,
it
wasn't it? Yeah.
You know, for me, it had a bit of everything. So, you know, if we get... I don't want to draw. Obviously, I want us to win. But, you know, if we get just an equally good game, I'd be happy.
Excellent. Right, so let's hope that Charlton can get those 3 points on Tuesday in a huge game here. A real playoff 6-pointer against Bradford City. Right, that's pretty much all we have time for on tonight's Charlton Live. Thank you, Mark, and congratulations once again.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Right, I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks for all your tweets and emails. They've kept us going with just the two of us here this evening. So well done to you guys. Myself and Nathan, I don't think Tom's about, will be back on Thursday. So Mark, actually, you can come in if you fancy it.
More cake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The big match preview to look back at whatever happens against Bradford and ahead to next Saturday's game up at Milton Keynes. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Let's hope we can get those very important 3 points on Tuesday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.